BBB Bandar.
Sounds like, you know, the Bush Blair Corporation, BBC, but there we are. It's very good. Yes, right? Bandar and BBB.
Had decided, you know, that, you know what, we need to, you know, whatever, cripple Iran or whatever.
Yeah, that's right.
You know, who cares what Faisal Turki...
But
So he resigned. He was ambassador for 15 months.
Sure.
Less, you know, a little bit more than a year. Mm. After a while, he's like, you know what? I'm out of here. Because this is... I can't work like this. I'm discussing things, and then this guy flies in. What I'm trying to explain is that this is nothing new.
No.
We had this during the Bush era, you know, Bandar came and said, you know, what?
Canceled
all
it.
Options on the table.
Sure.
And as, you know, usual... Condi and, you know, George and Donald and Dick. And,
yes,
you know,
Donald Dick, yes, that's right. It makes a whole difference from Donald Duck, yes, but we're talking about the same kind of politics.
Exactly.
Yes,
all of them saluted, yes, sir.
Yes.
Okay, and you know,
as Donald Duck would.
You know, Bandar was threatening them. You know,
yes,
he wasn't asking.
Yeah, yeah,
he was saying,
no,
you know
no,
what,
no.
We'll just go give our oil to the Chinese, forget about dollar denomination of oil, forget about allowing your ships access. You know, we're going to play you like we always do.
Do.
Crudely and openly and hard-fisted and ham-fisted.
Yes.
Okay?
Sure.
And they all said, you know what, you know, sorry.
Yes.
Sorry for mentioning.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
So, fast forward to this.
Yes.
You know,
You
know, Mr. Zarif does his thing, talking, you know, smiling, you know, negotiation.
Sure.
And what happens? Who flies in? Last time was Bandar. This time
BB.
It was Bibi. All right? Flies in.
And dictates to...
And says to, you know...
Obama, let's Hossein. Not have any of this.
And remember, his name is Hossein, right?
Yes.
To Hossein.
Yeah, to Hossein. We're not having any of this. Tighten the sanctions.
This is a, you know, a wolf in sheep's clothing. It's
yeah.
all lies.
Yes.
The Iranians are liars. They're genetically liars.
Yes.
It's all lies.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
Very racist.
Oh, he
way.
Is.
By
he
the
is
way, just very kind of crude.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, imagine saying these generalities about Jews. Imagine what
uh-huh,
crazy
yes.
thing
oh,
would happen in the
goodness,
world. If
the media would have a
you
field
know,
day.
If Ali Zarif or Ali Rouhani would go in and be like, you know, the Jews can't be trusted because they always, you know, look after...
For, yeah, and
they're
then
they're always looking out for number
see,
one. You know, if somebody were to say, oh, the Jews always looking out for number one, always playing everyone... How dare anybody even say that, right?
Yes.
And I don't believe that that's the case with all Jews, but hey, somebody could look at history and say this is something they do.
Do, yeah.
Now imagine somebody saying that. No, but Bibi is allowed to come and say every insult
to
Iranians.
Yes.
And, you know, their character.
Say all those lies.
All those things that they have to. Oh, they're lying. You know, the religious leader is lying about not wanting atomic weapons. This is all a ruse. This is all, you know, whatever.
Sure.
Okay? And what does Hossein do?
All options are all back on the table.
Don't worry about it.
We will
get all we need to get out of Iran.
Sure.
Okay? So, this is who we're dealing with. This is why the Supreme Leader said, you know, we have nothing against people talking to each other.
Sure.
But you have to remember who the party on the other side is.
Is.
You shouldn't forget who they are.
Who they are.
Okay?
Exactly.
And some people, unfortunately, in Iran...
Still don't get that.
And in the Islamic world, still don't understand
Stand
who
that.
America is.
Sure.
They still... have goodwill to them.
Sure.
They still think that, and this to me is not evidence of their goodness. The people who have this in their heart is not evidence that they're good people.
No.
It's evidence that they are ignorant, that they have a disease in their heart.
Heart, yes.
That they have a flaw in their character.
If you don't mind me saying, Dr. Madhuchap, because you know, in the last couple of minutes, I think Egypt's a wonderful example of what's exactly happening at the moment. They tried to be everything to everyone, especially to the US, and what happens? They get hijacked. And this is exactly the sort of thing that, thank God, with the leadership of Imam Khomeini, because this program is dedicated to the man who changed the world. Really, I mean, all my hat goes off to him every time that, you know, really this man was remarkable. That, you know, he had that foresight, that, you know, that vision, that he saw exactly things for what they were. And, you know, he clarified it for us. And this is why you've survived these 35 years. And God willing, if you carry on like that. And I love the fact that Bibi keeps doing that thing where he says, oh, we're a moment away by tightening the sanctions. Yes, we are a moment away by becoming even more independent and more stronger than we've ever been before.
And look, who is the crazy one now?
Yeah, who's the crazy
who's
one now?
Who's the one that everybody's making fun of?
Sure.
Who is the one they're like,
yeah,
the
people are laughing
crazy.
Him out of the room.
Right? It's, look, just think about the people that Americans and the British elites have you know, allied themselves with. Exactly. It's, you know, animals like Bandar and Bibi.
Bandar and Bibi show.
Right?
Yeah.
I mean, of all the people in the world.
For goodness.
That you're going to be allied with. Yeah. Of all the people you're going to allow them to fly in their private jet into Andrews Furs and come to you privately.
Yeah.
And
you're
getting Bandar to come? Who, you know, is funding the people who chop off heads with kitchen knives?
That's right. Christian priests who had their heads hacked off.
People who
saws?
Yeah, who, like, yeah. They cut open the chests and take out hearts
and put them in.
And he likes it. Believe, he likes it. Oh, yeah. Don't think he's, like, revolted by it. Oh, I'm holding my nose.
No.
He's like, go do this.
Go and do this.
Because this will show our power and this will show how, you know, you can't mess with us, you know?
Exactly.
And then Bibi, I like to call him, you know, Bibi Smuts. Yeah. You know, like Jan Smuts wasn't that bad. You know, Bota. Bibi yeah. Bota, you know? Yeah.
Bibi Bota.
Right? Yeah, you know, who just hangs in there with apartheid. You know, the whole world is like, dude, you know, chill out on this. You know, separate roads.
Yes.
You know, for Palestinians and for Jews,
exactly.
You know? And no, he's like, no, we're sticking to this, you know? So these are the people that Western elites have allied themselves with. And the question for us,
yes,
and the issue that we have to think about,
sure,
and the issue that our listeners should, in my view,
yes,
consider and reflect on,
yes,
is not that you have animals like Bibi and Bandar in the world. No. They've always existed. They've always done these things.
Yes.
The issue is, why would those people who are the elites, who are, you know, from your homes and your families and your colleges
have
and your towns
expectations of them.
And your churches and your synagogues, mm-hmm, and your, you know, mosques, why would these people, who, you know, they're your cousins, they're your dads, your uncles, your, you know, brothers, your husbands, your wives, why would they even look at these people like Bibi and Bandar and consider them even worthy of their
attention?
Right. Well, there's other people that they could be, you know, a nice, civilized, educated person. Okay, so the point I'm trying to simply make is, you know, why wouldn't you want to have good relations with a country like Iran that is a republic,
sure,
that has elections, that has, you know, a deep, you know, complex structure where people are involved, where you have local elections, where you have 800,000, you know, people in this population running for.
Well, I think
that you have a leader who talks about, you know, progress and standard of living and, you know, healthcare and education and technology and, you know, the main thing in life being that you have more knowledge. And why would you not align yourself with that and align yourself with Bandar?
Well, I think the other thing is that, you know, honestly, that the, you know, we come back to that NAM summit as well. I think that in itself said everything, that, you know, the majority of nations in this world are tired of this hegemony and they really do want to ally themselves with Iran. And, you know, wanting to make broader ties and expand ties and, you know, to learn about this Islamic civilization as well, as we've discussed before. And it just leaves me to say, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. May the peace and mercy and blessings of Allah be upon you all. Thank you very much for listening.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad. Rabbana,
ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Rabbana, ya Hayyu, ya Qayyum, nawwir qalbana.
You're listening to the program The Key on IRIB English Radio with Shiraz Hussain Agha, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom and a PhD in philosophy.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. I'm your host, Shalara. Today we're going to be asking a question about a very fundamental question which often comes in the mind of non-Muslims. It also comes in the minds of Muslims, but obviously this question wouldn't have come to the mind of Muslims if it wasn't raised by non-Muslims. And that question is Islam a violent religion or not? Now, in order to, and then if it is a violent religion, then you know, how is this justifiable? Well, we can first of all, we can approach this question in a polemic way, and then approach it in a an intellectual and a rational way. And when we approach it in a polemic way, we have to see this: is Islam really more violent than other religions or not? It's interesting to note that a software engineer, he analyzed the Quran and the Bible. He analyzed them and to see which one was more violent, and he found that it's interesting to note that in his processing of these two holy books to see which one is the most violent, in his conclusion he wrote this. This person, his name was Tom Anderson. He was a software engineer. He said that this project was inspired by the ongoing public debate around whether or not terrorism connected with Islamic fundamentalism reflects something inherently and distinctly violent about Islam compared to other major religions or not. It just took about 2 minutes for his software to analyze these two books, but he found that, surprisingly, the Old Testament was far more violent than the New Testament, and more than twice as violent as the Quran. Mr. Anderson summarized his conclusion in the following way. He said that killing and destruction are referenced slightly more often in the New Testament, 2.8%, than in the Quran, 2.1%. But the Old Testament clearly leads more than twice that of the Quran in mentions of destruction and killing, 5.3%. He adds, first I want to make it very clear that we have not set out to prove or disprove that Islam is more violent than other religions. Moreover, we realized that the Old and New Testaments and the Quran are neither the only literature in Islam and Christianity and Judaism, nor do they constitute the sum of these religions, religious teachings, and protocols. Nevertheless, this is a conclusion that he reached, which is interesting. So polemically, we could say that these texts, which are form very fundamental and essential sources of doctrine in these religions, right? We see that polemically, we could say that these two texts, which are the sources of Judeo-Christian faith, statistically, we can say that there are references to violent concepts within sacred scriptures, such as death, killing, destruction, the destruction of nations, and so on and so forth. But if we were to use this as a measure of a book which is violent, and of violence and not, we would have to say that no, the other Abrahamic scriptures are more violent than the Quran. Thank you for joining us here on The Key. We were looking at violence and the Quran and Islam. Until next time, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Shiraz Hussein Aga, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome and a PhD in philosophy, on the program The Key on IRIB English Radio.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
First methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis sabri wa salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, now let's listen to Brother Hasnain Rajab Ali.
I begin in Allah's name, the Beneficent, the Merciful, and all praise belongs to Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala for giving us this life though we don't deserve to exist, for endowing us with too many graces and gifts by which you and I will never be able to understand nor to appreciate. Allah says, قُلْ مَنْ حَرَّمَ زِينَةَ اللَّهِ الَّتِي أَخْرَجَ لِعِبَادِهِ, which He has brought forth for His servants. God made everything beautiful. Why should I deny the beauty? No one is saying not to have a $1 million car. No one is saying not to have a palace. But ask the person, what is your vision? Is it wrong to have that power? No. But it's got conditions. The conditions of morality, dignity, honesty, not cheating, not fault finding, not being evil, not being destructive. You find an individual who looks around and says, all I want to do is God's work. Everybody starts to laugh at you. Really? You want to do God's work? You go to for salah, you pray at the prayer time, you went to Hajj, your family wears hijab, ha ha ha. And you and I feel sad. Oh no, no, please, no, no. I know, I've seen kids when their moms come and pick them up from school. They say to their moms, Mom, when you pick me up, just pick me up at the end of the block. And the mother comes to me and says, my son doesn't want me to pick him up at his school bus. You know why? Because I wear hijab. I wear this headscarf. And he's embarrassed among his friends that he doesn't want his mother to appear like she's weird. So Mom, don't appear. Look at that pressure of a child afraid to tell even their friends that my mother is modest. That's the danger. That today the norm is being cool. How many girlfriends do you have? Who's the coolest guy in school? The homecoming king. And who's that usually? Usually the quarterback, if you got a football team. He's the biggest guy, most muscles, the best looking, and all the girls are drooling over him. And then vice versa. Who's the most famous girl? Oh, she's the prettiest in school, and everybody wants to put their hands on her. And she's like twiddling, you know, like a hook, you know. Ha ha, who's going to bite me? And then she does this and just throws it. Next. And we're all drooling like this, like, you know, please me, me. Allah says, فَلَا تَغُرَّنَّكُمُ الْحَيَاةُ الدُّنْيَا وَلَا يَغُرَّنَّكُمْ بِاللَّهِ الْغَرُورِ. Don't let the glitter of this world fool you. And don't let shaitan fool you. For there is no meaning to that. For I see those same people who are drooling. You see their pictures when they're in their 40s and 50s. They develop bellies and double chins or whatever. None of that is bad. But no longer marketable in the satanic way. And they're starting to age. And now they're starting to think, oh my God, you remember when I was young? I was so agile. I had all these girls. And then he's sitting with his wife and his kids. Dad, you had all these girlfriends. Yeah. Can you and I even fathom the idea of saying that to our children? But that's going to come. And your son or your daughter will say, Dad, you went around with so many girls. Mom, how many boyfriends did you have? You'll be so embarrassed. Son, don't do that. But you did it. Yeah, but I was foolish. Well, what's wrong if I'm foolish now? And the snowball perpetuates? I think you and I need to build our environment in a moral way, but it's not easy. Easier said than done. Trust me, to abstain from a beautiful, attractive thing that may lead me to indecency is so difficult. Allah says, وَلَنَبْلُوَنَّكُمْ بِشَيْءٍ مِّنَ الْخَوْفِ. We will test you with fear. So this history of Karbala, the movement of Imam Hussein, the stories that we tell about young ones to the old ones, and each one taking permission from the Imam, is not something simple. It's deep. It's the kind of depth you and I need to have where we look at these individuals and say, how can I be like you 10%? I would love to be 100% like you, but at least let me start. But what do you need to do? Well, you need to say, well, what am I doing in my day-to-day life? I'm addicted to gaming. Somebody just sent me an email and said, brother, please talk about gaming. It's a disease. And today our computers are so sophisticated that the world of gaming is becoming so real. and the power of the computer with the wide area networks of the internet is getting so much better that there are kids now who live in a world that is completely fantasy zoned, and they're actually making money in that world by distributing their fantasies, and the rest of the world is now hooking on like a drug. Like, let me watch this gamer and how is he playing, and then they monetize on that. It's become a world of fantasies. When you examine those people, they're not bad. They're wonderful, intelligent youth. But many a times, there was no communication at a young age. Mom and dad are busy. The child is bored. Finds his little toy. Starts to give him pleasure, just like going to the refrigerator. And you put money, you know, you put food in your mouth. You feel good. Guess what? Man, I can press the button, you know, with my mouse. Forget about mouse now. I got my fingers are touching. I've seen these gamers' chairs. Subhanallah, they're designed like F-15s, you know, going to space. It's got everything in it. Three-dimensional virtual worlds, and you're living in this thing. Like, wow. You can feel it. Even the vibrations on your chair. Like you're living in that world of fantasy. You ask the question, why are you there? How much Quran do you recite? Quran, what's Quran? There's no time for that. This is the electronic drug. And you find out, seeing kids who don't want to sit and talk to you. They want to run back home, get into the little dark room, turn the lights off, and get into the world of gaming. Why are they there? These are modern day challenges that we have to address. The technology has reached us to such a level today. Social media interactions have become so powerful that 12-year-olds, 10-year-olds are getting on planes to go meet strangers in other states because they've been given this illusion that there's somebody who's going to fulfill their fantasy. You see children getting killed because of online relations. And we are so stuck on it that even if you have 100 million followers, every day you look at the stats. How many likes did I get today? How many more people? What else can I do to be even more famous? Like, where are you going to go with this fame? Well, the more people, the more marketable. The more marketable, the more money I make. And I'm going to die with a legacy. And the world is going to look at me like, wow, what a great actor. Frank Sinatra. You ask the modern day kids today, who's Frank Sinatra? Huh? Frank who? John Wayne. John who? What? These were the gods walking on earth. Elizabeth Taylor, her pretty blue eyes. Everybody was drooling over her with her diamonds. Where is Elizabeth Taylor? Does anybody even know there? No. Wikipedia it. Really? That's what Elizabeth Taylor died for? So that people should Wikipedia tomorrow? You and I, in this world, I'm standing on this podium. You think this fame and glory of public speaking is going to hold on for long? My own grandchildren, great-grandchildren won't even know my first name. Is that the objective that everybody should say, Haj Hasanain, mashallah? Who cares? What we care is, are we promoting Allah's name? Are we promoting the Prophet's name? For that's what lasts. وَالْبَاقِيَاتُ الصَّالِحَاتِ خَيْرٌ عِنَّ رَبِّكَ ثَوَابًا وَخَيْرٌ عَمَلًا. This is what lasts. What lasts are our deeds. But our deeds cannot come in the right direction until we validate, until we put that lens of the Prophet, the lens of the Quran. So why did these children get stuck into gaming? Because there was a human interaction that didn't talk right. There was oppression, suppression, ignorance. This child didn't know what to do. And many a times they lost control of the world. But that joystick, whew, that gives me control. Move forward, move backward, it responds on the fly when I want it. I like that. So what ends up happening is you get addicted in that world. And this forms of entertainment is not haram. But when you start overdoing it, it starts to become very dangerous. Because suddenly you're finding yourself at the age of 30 and you know nothing. And you've fixed nothing. Well, what have you been doing? Well, I've been living in that world of fantasy. That every time I get out of my room, the reality is waiting for me. And I get so depressed, I don't want to get out. And you become a zombie? Is that the solution?
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahim كريم عظيم عليم حليم
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
سيوتو
شوما يعني
Bazaar. Simply put, wheat is part of the grass family. Some have argued that wheat domesticated mankind, bringing humans away from the colorful and adventurous hunter-gatherer lifestyle and settling them permanently next to their fields. It is also said that wheat is responsible for the agricultural revolution. It has supplied the calories that made it possible for the world's population to race toward 8 billion people. Presently, wheat is grown on more land areas across the world than any other food crop. Hello everyone, welcome to another edition of Bazaar, the weekly program that analyzes industries, markets, profits, and all sorts of things that connect us nationally and internationally. This week we will venture through the vast agriculture industry. We wanted to see how its products are linked to the booming food sector and uncover why it is so important to the economy. So let's get started. Our quest for answers took us to Jor-A Company. It was established nearly four decades ago and specializes in producing flour. This flour mill has massive production halls which houses the latest machinery used in this business. Everything coming out of the flour mill is inside each grain of wheat and none of it is wasted. Anything that is not used for human consumption is used for animal feed. It all starts with the wheat that is brought to the mill. Wheat that enters the facilities is sampled and tested before anything else is done. It is analyzed for moisture, gluten, and other characteristics. If it meets the standards, then it is taken to be stored. The miller's job is to separate the grain into different parts. Inside each grain is flour, bran, and germ. This is a gradual process that involves lots of sieving and sifting using giant machines in a closed-circuit process. The second stage, after crushing wheat into coarse fragments, is to add moisture and it is stored in a separate area for 12 hours. This stage prepares the wheat for further sifting to separate bran and fine flour and is tested again for particular characteristics. Now it is ready for the final grinding phase, where it will be sifted some more. Back in the day, these processes used to be done by stone presses, and it was much faster. It might have taken 10 minutes to make stone grout flour. But with modern mills, the grinding process might take over an hour to complete. Different components of wheat are separated and later recombined to make different blends of flour, which might include bran as well. The final product is either white and bran or wholemeal flour. At this stage, it is finally ready for packaging and distribution. Over the years, this company has expanded its production such that now it produces 12 times more flour on a daily basis compared to when it started out. The production line uses state-of-the-art machinery that has been imported from Germany and Italy to get the job done. An important aspect of quality production is the different types of massive storage silos as well as the raw material this company uses. Having a clear vision for production is also key in maintaining quality, but that's easier said than done. This company believes that having a bright plan for the future and an outline of steps to execute such a plan is critical to a smooth mass production. The mill produces flour along the lines of exports and adheres to national and international standards for production, safety, and quality. Producing the highest quality of products to satisfy its customers is, of course, its main priority. This company has overcome numerous obstacles in order to enjoy its many achievements over the years. One such a hurdle in its journey has been the U.S.-imposed economic sanctions, which has hindered many exporting processes for the businesses. Now, a lot of work and effort goes into farming wheat. The right location, soil conditions, seeds, germination, water, and so much more all make up the ingredients for a good harvest. Over the years, the government has implemented several plans and schemes to help support farmers and wheat productions nationwide. So at the present time, how is the wheat production like in the country? Around 6 million hectares of land across the country are used for farming. That is a 2.5 million hectare increase in land area used to plant crops compared to previous years. About a third of wheat fields in Iran are irrigated and the rest is rain-fed, which makes these crops vulnerable to rainfall variation. That's all according to the National Foundation of Wheat Growers. In March 2020, the government announced a scheme to purchase nearly 75% of domestic wheat productions at guaranteed prices. The goal was to reduce reliance on imports for domestic consumption. However, farmers thought that the government purchased wheat brought them little profit. As a result, some farmers opted to sell their wheat for animal feed at a higher price instead. So the government increased its purchase price to make up for the deficits. Wheat production has witnessed many ups and downs over the years. This year, farmers are dealing with droughts and pests such as locusts, as well as an increase in the cost of fertilizers and seeds. Consequently, there has been a 30% decrease in wheat harvest this year. In order to remedy the situation, the government has granted permission to import wheat and increase the production of seeds as well. Wheat is believed to be an inseparable part of our everyday food, as it can be used for various meals like pasta, bread, cookies, and so much more. It's considered a strategic crop because it can be transformed into different products with added value, which increases profits. In the world today, the food industry is worth billions and is growing at a rapid pace. As you probably know, the national food production is heavily dependent on productions in the agriculture industry. The food industry is the biggest contributor to the national economy. Going off the figures from Iran's Customs Administration, this sector makes up over 20% of Iran's non-oil revenues. This industry is almost entirely privately owned too, and for those who want to enter this sector, it offers a world of opportunities. The food sector also holds the largest share in creating jobs in the country and accounting for around 50% of the country's entire industrial employment. That's according to the Ministry of Industries, Mining and Trade. Over 5 million tons of agricultural and food products were exported from Iran in the first 8 months of this year. Based on data from the Ministry of Agriculture, these exports raked in roughly $3.3 billion. It might be interesting to know pistachios topped the exporting charts in terms of value. Dairy products, sweets, poultry, and aquaculture, as well as a diverse range of agricultural products, are some of the main items exported this year. Iran exports these items to numerous market destinations across the world, including countries in Europe, Asia, and South America. All right, everyone, it's time for me to take you out on the field to walk you through the production procedure of a material that we use on a day-to-day basis. I won't tell you any further. Let's begin the adventure. One of the major innovations of the past centuries has been the introduction and wide adaptation of plastics for many day-to-day applications. The mass use of plastic started in the 1950s and has steadily grown ever since. Today, more than 300 million tons of plastic are produced worldwide every year. The popularity of plastic is due not only to its low production costs, but also its numerous practical characteristics, including its low weight, acid resistance, and flexibility. In our everyday lives, we interact with thousands of materials that might be hard to imagine life without. One of these frequently used materials is plastic. If we look around, we can see that plastic products are almost everywhere. We go shopping and we end up with loads of plastic bags. We go to the kitchen and we use plastic wrappers for food packaging. But hold on a second. Have you ever wondered how all these plastic products are produced before reaching your hands? Today we decided to come to Sepeed Company and we're gonna go 11 meters underground to see how nylon is produced with these raw materials. So don't go anywhere, stay with me. Now, we are 11 meters underground. As a matter of fact, most of the plastic we see around is manufactured from crude oil. The raw materials, which are mainly polyethylene granules, are transported to the factory in the form of hefty sacks. The first stage of the production process begins with the mixing of the polyethylene granules with other types of chemicals. All right, this place is very crowded, obviously like any other factory. That is why I have to shout here. After the raw materials are combined with other chemicals, they get to this stage where different steps take place. The first step is suction. There's this thing that sucks in these granules into this funnel. And then this funnel passes the granules through this furnace, or we can call the extruder, where the granules are twisted and turned into a dough-like material at a very high temperature. And then the dough-like material passes through a machine, and the machine molds the dough-like material into a plastic material. And this is the final product. And if you're wondering how it is molded into plastic, how the dough material is turned into plastic, there are some cold air that are blown from beneath that help the dough-like material to be shaped and formed into plastic-like material. Plastics consist of long molecular chains known as polymers, a word that means made of many parts. When the material reaches the molding state, some are cooled with cold air and some are frozen with water. And this results in a wide range of plastic products. In case you're wondering how some nylon or plastic bags are colorful, this is when the colorful pellets find their way into the white granules. These colorful pellets are called master batch that are added to the mixture to produce nylons with wide range of colors. By the end of the molding process, the final product, which is the nylon, is ready. It was really interesting to me, and I think for every single one of you, to realize the fact that the nylon that we see in our everyday lives are actually made of very small and tiny and shiny granules, and then they reach into our hands. So that might be something that hasn't even crossed our mind. Plastics are responsible for our modern life we enjoy today. But have you ever thought about where all these plastics we use might end up? A great amount of plastic is not recycled and ends up in landfills or the natural environment. And today, plastic pollution is threatening the wildlife and human health. Today, I figured out that all those plastic bags I receive when I go shopping are actually produced with different patterns in this place. So without a doubt, plastic has so many valuable uses in our day-to-day lives. But we should never neglect the fact that at the same time, it has some irreparable damages on the environment. However, in the modern world today, with the technological innovations, we can replace plastic with eco-friendly alternatives to reduce the waste and save the planet Earth. For now, take care and bye-bye. Well, personally, I always learn from watching the production process of a product that I use every day. I hope you enjoyed it too. Now, without further ado, let's dive right into some interesting news and trends regarding the agricultural industry. With the surge in population, the need for food also increases, and the agriculture sector is where the country gets most of its food security. That is why now we are seeing a rising trend of the influence of technology on the agriculture industry. According to Vice Presidential Office for Science and Technology, solutions to challenges in this area can be found with technology innovation. There are dozens of knowledge-based companies that are active in this field. Some products that have been commercialized include livestock breeding tech and vaccines, biofertilizers, food industry enzymes, and so much more. What better way to get the lay of the land than to get a bird's eye view from a drone? The use of drones in the agriculture sector is increasing as drone production has also gone up inside the country. The use of drones in Iranian farms has risen threefold this year. That's according to the Ministry of Agriculture Mechanization Expansion Center. This technology has been locally manufactured by nearly dozens of domestic companies who have already released 65 new models. The drones are mainly used for spraying pesticides and applying fertilizers. Iran is home to thousands of medicinal plants that naturally grow nationwide. These plants are also widely used in the pharmaceutical industry. Now, Iran is creating 6 new innovation centers to develop the supply chain of medicinal plants in the country. These centers have been established in the cities of Tehran, Kermanshah, and Hamadan, among others. The goal is to pave the way for industries to have easier access to ideas and products in this field. Medicinal plants have been used for centuries in Iranian traditional medicine as well. That wraps up our show for today. Drop us a line with your thoughts and comments via our email. Don't forget to leave us your feedback. And on behalf of the entire team of Bozor, thank you for tuning in. Stay safe and bye-bye. We'll be right back.
I'm a teacher.
I'm a researcher.
I'm a mother.
I'm a lawyer.
And I believe in acting kindly toward you, because you are
a Muslim lady.
You are very special. There's no one just like you. You are very special, and I'm so glad you're mine.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah. Dear listeners, thank you so very much for joining us on today's brand new episode of Muslim Lady. It is an honor and a pleasure to have you all with us. And of course, as always, I have the privilege of hosting my wonderful sister and awesome expert, Sister Razia Shamini. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, my full of energy friend.
Throughout these last few episodes, we've been talking about how to equip our girls with the mindset and skill set, basically, that they need in order to carry out their roles and responsibilities as adults. And the fundamental idea that we rose was that first thing first, you need to set your priorities straight and decide which route and which path you want to take on in life. Otherwise, you will constantly be in a state of grapple and conflict with yourself, trying to figure out, you know, what the heck do I want to do with myself? And then you said that, especially for those, well, actually at this time, at this point in time and age, I think it's like this everywhere, but there's this Islamic value system and then there's a secular value system.
And there's a mixture of these
and
two.
There's there's this gray little area in between where I think especially prevalent in Muslim societies where there's this mix of religion and culture, and I find that even more confusing than living in a non-Islamic country where it's like black and white, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But when you live in an Islamic country, you've got these all these cultures, and Muslim people have been practicing it for centuries, and then you're like, well, that doesn't make sense. And if you don't do it, you kind of get labeled as, you know, not abiding by Muslim culture, and in reality that's all it is. It's the culture of a bunch of Muslim people who in reality has nothing to do with Islam.
And besides what you said, in the recent years, mm-hmm. maybe in the very, very recent, like maybe 2-3 years back, you have seen people, you know, taking their distance away from their culture and sticking to what they like. And people no longer care about what others think about you.
Mm.
Because this is a kind of culture in itself, that very you true. Care about yourself, your desires, your joys, your peace of mind. So what, however you're happy with, this is the best way for you.
Mm.
This has become very trendy. And a lot of people no longer care about what their parents want them to do, what their society or culture wants them to do. Even in the religious city that I live in, I have seen a lot of changes. Like in past 2-3 years, you wouldn't see a lot of people trespassing the boundaries of culture.
Mm.
And there were certain red lines that people stuck to them. And sometimes they trespassed them, but in a very careful way.
Mm. Very discreet.
Very discreet and under the skin.
Mm.
But these days, they're so frank. And this is like, you have a problem with it?
Yeah, live with it.
You leave, mm. right? I'm fine. I'm happy the way I am. This I'm talking about an Islamic
yeah.
society where I'm living right now. I go through some Instagram pages, you know, to see how ladies in the West, of course it's not like living in the West, but you can see the trends and the, like when you look at the like numerous amounts of posts posted by people living in non-Islamic countries, you can get to grasp and understand a kind of
gist,
the gist of what's going on in their life, what's important for them, what are the values for them, like, and you see that. For instance, I know this Shia girl or this Muslim girl. It's either they have the niqab on, they have the veil on,
mm.
and they are very, very careful to, you know, abide by the certain restrictions that they have in their mind. Or it's the fact that they are very, very Western.
Mm.
I mean, the way, the colors that they choose, they call it hijabi, but it's...
It's not.
It's not.
Yeah.
And so much makeup.
Yes.
And like the camera in your face.
Skin tight clothes.
Exactly.
Their ankle showing, their
exactly.
wrist showing,
exactly.
their neck showing.
You got it.
Yeah.
This is what I see.
Mm.
And is this culture?
Yeah. I'd say it's culture.
Western culture.
Yeah. Not Islamic culture. Because
exactly.
you see it happening in Muslim countries too.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what I'm trying to say is that we are affected by the culture a lot. And
sure.
these are the places where you have to draw lines, like priorities. Like, what do I want from my
mm.
life? What does religion want from me?
Absolutely.
And the core roots of your values will have to be like certain and definite
concrete.
And determined and concrete for you. Otherwise, you would get lost.
We're going to be back after a short break, so stay with us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Muslim Lady.
Thank you again for joining us. We've been talking about some really interesting stuff.
How to equip our girls with the mindset and skill set, basically, that they need. It's nice in theory.
Yeah.
You gotta have your core root beliefs and your doctrines and your ideology straightened out and concrete and this and that, no matter what you believe in. How do you get to that point?
Well, there is this outer surface descriptions or rulings or laws that they tell you, the three L's: loose, less attractive, and long for the hijab.
Yes.
Right?
Mm.
So it's kind of, you know, less attractive. So whatever makes you just shine somewhere where you go,
mm.
all the eyes would get on you.
And turn heads.
Exactly. Yeah. This is, hijab is something to
conceal.
Conceal
it
your
totally
beauties.
Defeats the objective.
Exactly.
Of hijab.
Loose, and it wouldn't be skin tight, as you said.
Mm.
And long, it wouldn't. Your ankles, your wrists, and certain parts of your body will have to be covered. So it's very, very simple and straightforward.
Mm.
But then, why do we have to do this? what is the philosophy of hijab? Then you go to the idea of haya, modesty, chastity. What is the difference between
so
the two?
It's a matter of raising awareness and increasing our knowledge.
Exactly.
Basically.
Yeah. And then knowing exactly what religion wants from
exactly.
you.
Exactly.
Because the boundaries are very clear cut.
Yeah.
Right? And loose, less attractive and long, it gives you a very good principle. It doesn't limit you. You can wear different colors, different styles, whatever. But then the principles, the values are there in your mind, and you decide. As a mature woman, you decide that, in, like me, in different societies or cultures or countries that I go, my hijab is different.
Definitely.
Right? When I'm in when I go to Saudi Arabia, I dress differently. Mm. When I'm in Iran, I dress differently. When I go to Canada, I dress differently. If I go to the UK, I dress if I go to in the mosque of the UK. But there are some limitations, there are some borderlines that I would have to observe.
Oh, you can't
them.
Compromise on
exactly.
Them.
These are not compromisable. But then there are some gray areas that you can pick, you can choose. Choose which is based on the three L's and the value system that you have. What is haya? What is this? You can decide what you have to do. It's quite clear.
It's safe for us to say that one of the most important and crucial things we need to do in order to be able to abide to the value system that we've chosen, i.e. Islamic value system, is to increase our knowledge about what that value system actually is and what it demands of us. Because oftentimes, especially a lot of like second or third generation immigrants that live in Western countries, and even some of our revert sisters, they don't know, you know? It's something that they see so often, and it's become such a norm to them that they don't know it's unlawful for your little ankle to show, or when you pull your sleeves up for your arms to show,
or when you wear nail polish. There are certain shared rulings in Shia and Sunni, but sometimes it's the matter of difference of different sects, right? So whether you're Shia or Sunni, but most of the things are shared, right?
Definitely.
So we're going to have a different session talking about how to instill these qualities in our children. One of them was to raise your awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You're talking about an adult or a revert, right? That you need to study about Islam, about the Islamic teachings, and the wisdom or the hikmah behind some of the rulings. What are the teachings of Islam? Now, we want to go delve into the topic a little bit and explain about what Islam wants from us and what are the measures that we can take as ladies of the home to instill this value within ourselves and our family.
Mm.
So this is the question that we want to answer today, one of the questions. Well, when you look at our main reference, which is the Quran, there are so many beautiful verses that highlight the importance of modesty in a woman's life, right?
Mm-hmm.
And we have talked about just simply putting on a veil on your head is not called hijab. You have the modesty or the haya of the eyes. You have the modesty or haya of walking, where
of the speech, of the behavior, how you carry yourself.
Exactly. Like we have the case of it gives us specific instances. The daughter of Prophet Shu'aib, and when they were Prophet Musa was following them to go to the, when they wanted to thank him because he helped the girls water the cattle, so they wanted to thank him and they took him to their father. And if it's these days, we chit-chat, so how is it going with you? So what are you studying? What are you doing? Oh, it's so nice to catch up and everything, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then what did they do? They talked the minimum with him, as he was a non-mahram.
Mm.
And also, she walked behind him so that he wouldn't see the shape of her body, he wouldn't get attracted to her. And even when he saw her, she walked in a way that the Quran describes her that tamshi ala istihya. She walked in a manner
modesty.
Of modesty.